Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the PlanetIRL.com podcast. This week we're doing an F1 show, and joining me are Brian, our F1 editor here at the site, and my good buddy Todd from FormulaOneBlog.com. How are you guys this evening?
Good.
Excellent.
Good. Thanks for having us on.
Yep, anytime. So there has been a lot of news this week. There is a ton. A lot of it involves a silly season. We'll get into that a little bit later. But first, we're going to do a little review of Singapore. And we're going to try a new thing here on the show, a three-word race review. Pick three words that you can use to describe this weekend's race at Singapore. I'll start, and my three words were anticlimactic, packed, because it was very full, and the atmosphere there was something we haven't seen a lot of this year. What did you guys choose?
I made mine pretty straightforward. Mine just is nice, dry, clock. I just think he pulled something out of the bag that he'd obviously been saving for quite some time, and a lot faster than he usually is, and actually, especially after the rumors that are swirling around after qualifying, he really drove a great race, and it was nice to see Panasonic getting some decent results in Toyota.
Mm-hmm. We don't want to see them go from the sport. Yep, and Todd?
You know, I would have to say that this race, the first word that comes to mind is redemption. There was redemption really on three levels. Certainly Lewis Hamilton after Bennett and Monza redeemed himself, certainly there. Redemption for Timo Glock and bringing the Toyota back up, and redemption for Braun and getting back up ahead. The other obviously is I would pick would really probably just be failure. I think Red Bull failed to capitalize and make hay on Braun's bad luck, and this was their opportunity to do so. And I think, you know, Singapore may have been the big nail in the coffin for their, you know, title bid. So those are a couple words. I think visual. I think that the race, irrespective of whether you thought it was processional, tedious, mind-numbing, and desperately dull, it visually is just stunning, the race is.
And I think, you know, a lot of people criticized this race last year because, oh, it's a night race. What are we, NASCAR? But I think it's starting to grow on me, and I think maybe we could try this at a couple other venues that I think would be cool. I think Australia comes to mind for that, mm-hmm. and a couple others that I'd like to see.
Abu Dhabi, yeah.
That race is just going to be spectacular either way. So.
Yeah.
Well, another couple things that happened during Singapore that I wanted to touch on were Rosberg. He really showed what I've been saying for months now, and that is that he is one of the best drivers and most underrated drivers in all of the paddock. He, in my mind, is championship-worthy talent, and I think he showed that, and one little mistake really, really just ruined not only his race, but a lot of the work he's been working for all year was just ruined with that one little mistake coming out of pit road. What do you guys think of Rosberg?
I think, he's been putting up decent results for quite a while now, and I mean, it's no shock that he's not on the best team around. He really might get a big break next season, but I mean, I think it's no doubt when a lot of the other teams on the paddock do recognize that this guy does have some skill to him. So, I mean, put him in a top, one of the top three teams, and I think he'll be fighting for a championship as well, no doubt.
Yeah, I would echo certainly Brian's sentiment as well. You know, at F1B, I mean, we rate Nico. We rate him. I think he's the real deal. I think he's the full package, too. He's not just quick, but he's very PR savvy. He's well-spoken. He understands the concept of what it means to be a full F1 driver and the whole package. And you know, lots been made of his looks and good looks and swarthy good looks and hair and all that stuff. But the guy is actually the full package. And a lot of times in F1 and you know, I'm sure you guys have seen this as well, that really good drivers often you can spot them even in inferior teams. I think of Minardi and Fernando Alonso and even Michael Schumacher at Jordan. You know, you can just tell they're doing things in an inferior car that really shouldn't be capable of. And I think Nico's done that this year in a Williams. Can you show him some quarter at Singapore? Yeah, sure. I mean, they all make mistakes once in a while. It's not a very Nico-esque move to have him, you know, overshoot the white line on pit exit. But, you know, that isn't going to ruin anything. And I think Nico is the real thing. And I think in the right car, in the right team, I think this kid can really shine. I think he's the real deal.
Mm-hmm. Some other things that happened during the race. The thing that stands out to me the most was the brake problems that everyone was having. Everyone, all the Red Bulls and the Toro Rosso's, were just huge plumes of brake dust. And my favorite moment from the race, and I had to laugh because I watched the race DVR'd, was after I think it was Weber had made a stop and the car pulled out, they showed the mechanic picking the bits up of the brake pads. Something should tell you, maybe, just maybe, we should park the car now. Let's not push this any further, because something tells me when the brakes are still in the pit box that maybe it's not safe to send the car back out. I don't know. Do either of you know what brakes the RBRs were on?
Brembo.
Mm-hmm. And I know Jensen uses Brembo as well.
Yeah, that was and I don't mean to put you guys on the spot, and this is a lack of professionalism on my part, and I meant to hut it down, but do either of you did? I know that Red Bull and Toro Rosso's were running Brembos, but, and as you said, Cole, Jensen was. I'm not sure about any of the other teams running Brembos, and if you look at the Toro Rosso's, I really didn't see a lot of video footage of them having this big plumes of black smoke coming out of theirs. They just parked both of them, and I'm assuming that's a precautionary measure, because the bottom line is that you run the risk of two rookies basically putting, you know, several million-dollar car in the wall. What's the point? You know, they're running at the back of the grid and have no chance, so why risk it if there's a problem? Jensen had a major problem. I think I did read that Button's pedal was getting real long, but I don't know of any other teams that had issues, and if they were all on Brembos.
Well, I know Jensen, his whole career, sorry, Brian, I know his whole career he's had a personal contract with Brembo, and I'm mm-hmm. guessing that if he had them, Rubens probably had the same brakes. But I don't know of any others that do use Brembos.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you for sure, but it kind of adds a whole new element to this race as well, because now that, well, it looks like Montreal is back on the schedule, but every time they're going to that event as well, in the headlines, all you're hearing about is brakes, and how teams are going to cater to them and make them last to the finish. But I think it adds a very interesting dynamic to a GP, especially something like Singapore, when for a significant portion we were behind the safety car. So to keep things exciting, I mean, it's not the safest thing around, but obviously teams are going to be better prepared for next year. I would hope so, because if they don't get a safety car, then you can imagine how much quicker the brakes would deteriorate, excuse me. But yeah, I mean, you could even hear Ross Brawn over the radio to Barrichello and just telling him that Jensen was in, pretty much saying he's in big trouble, so you got to stay your brakes as well. So it really made the interesting quite fun to watch.
Yeah, it's, and you bring up a really good point, Brian. If you think back to this year escapes me, it's going to be the late 90s, but the year escapes me now, but when Heinz Harald Frentzen was in the Jordan and, you know, believe it or not, was in the points hunt and was in contention for potential championship, and they got to Canada, and it's such a difficult track and hard on brakes, and his brake disexploded and pretty much ended his title bid. And it's a really good point. This is the first we've seen, really, that I've read that there was a really sort of epic degradation or failure across many of the Brembo cars, you know, Brembo shod cars, at a race this year. It's kind of the first real brake problem that we've run into.
And I'm surprised with all the money these teams spend, and I know this is not an easy thing to do with a car that goes that fast and brakes that hard, but I'm surprised with all the money these teams spend and all the development they do that the brakes on an F1 car from a team that spends hundreds of millions per year can't stand up for a race. That just surprises me, even though, you know, this is, you know, 26 corners and a long race, and you guys do a lot of development. Can't you do a little bit better than running out of brakes halfway?
I think the biggest thing.
Go ahead, Brian.
You can go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I was just going to add to that, Cole, is that I know in the now this information is a little old, but I recall them saying that, you know, the brake pads on an F1 car, they have four of them, and just one of those brake pads would last our cars like 100,000 miles, and they go through four of those in one race. And I think the speed crew, I don't recall if it was Hobbs or Matcha, brought up a really good point that the entire concept of the brake pad and rotor is antithetical because the actual rotor isn't large enough to really dissipate the amount of heat that you're generating on there, and so they have to artificially try to, you know, cool them, and you know, with holes and air ducts and all that, and it's sort of antithetical. But it is an interesting point, Cole, in that this is the first time it's really kind of been a across-the-board issue with one single manufacturer, which would lend itself to maybe they just sort of missed the plot, missed the target. And then if you crawl back, not to jump series, but you crawl back to the ALMS with the Audis when they made their first outing at Sebring, that they ran into some major brake issues and had to replace some rotors on the fly in the pit. So it does crop up once in a while, but you're right, Cole, with the thousands of miles that they put on this up until Singapore, irrespective of no testing, they've put on tons of miles and really haven't ferreted out that issue with Monaco and Hockenheim and stuff like that, which are narrow, tight tracks. You'd think that they would have, but they didn't.
And you mentioned the Audi, and that brings up a good point. I heard your interview with Alan McNish, and he mentioned something about the reliability of the cars in Le Mans were so much better. They could last so much longer. And I know those cars have to brake just as hard, just as much, longer.
And have more weight.
Yeah, they're heavier.
Mm-hmm.
And those brakes, they'll replace them once or twice during the whole 24-hour race. So maybe we should do a little info sharing with all of this. I don't know. So maybe that's something to take into consideration. What else happened during Singapore? Oh, yes. Was it Heidfeld and Seudel that had that marvelous crash?
Yes.
Oh,
Did you hear what they're saying today in the press conference?
I did not, but
was pretty funny.
Go ahead.
Heidfeld was just—they're just talking about his $20,000 fine, and Heidfeld was saying that he hadn't seen the $20,000 yet, and Seudel was saying that it wasn't for him. So I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, when I saw it, I thought, I first read about it, and I hadn't seen it yet, so I thought, well, he must have done something pretty bad. And, I mean, he spinned all on his own, obviously a little frustrated trying to make a pass that just would never work in any series. And then the second he flipped around, he just put his full foot into it, and, I mean, clearly it was just a flat-out takeout. And I could understand why Heidfeld would be so upset. I mean, it was a bonehead move, flat-out.
And I want to say the first thing that came to my mind when I watched this, this instantly popped in my head was Paul Tracy and Alex Taglioni at, I think it was San Jose, when he just whipped the car right back out in traffic after he went off and spun. Look left, look right. What do we learn when we're children? Look both ways before you drive your car right into the middle of a freaking racetrack. That is just stupid.
Yeah, it was an odd move. In our forums, and I'm certainly you guys have debated as well at yours, but, you know, there were some apologists for Seudel, and I like Adrian Seudel. I think there again, here's a guy in an inferior car. I still think Lewis Hamilton's probably right. I think Adrian is a pretty darn good driver and probably deserves a better shot, but he came around, you know, he was frustrated, very frustrated being stuck behind the Toro Rosso as long as he was. He tried to make that desperate move down the inside, didn't work, backed off, spun him around, and in his mind, it spun him around right on the apex, right on the curb, right on the apex. And I know what he was thinking. If he could keep his foot in it, come right back out and slot in, he probably had either assumed Heidfeld had already passed him or was a little farther back and he could not lose any positions. And I know he was frustrated that he was going to lose a position. He knew he was. And there he floored it and came right off the apex. And a lot of people were like, well, you know, gee, a guy like Heidfeld should be able to, you know, give a little more room and come around. But, you know, those speeds, those guys are measuring moves in fractions of seconds. And Heidfeld's already committed to the apex. He sees the stalled or parked car, And all he's going to do is clip right around the wing. He's not going to go real wide because, you know, that'll ruin the speed that he had in the corner. So I don't think it was Heidfeld's fault at all. And a testament to that is Soutil hit him in the back right wheel. So Heidfeld had already passed him by that point. So, yeah, it was kind of a dorky move.
I don't blame Nick at all. I just think, you know, he's trying to keep it from stalling, so he's trying to keep the foot in it. But still, you're not going to get points. You're not going to finish on the podium. It's not worth the risk that you were taking by throwing that car back out on the track. If you're in the lead and this happens, I'm a little more lenient, but not
right.
Not like that. So,
yeah, and I guess, Brian, I don't know what your impression was, but it was probably a little built-up frustration coming off two really good races for Force India to have this sort of you know, desperately bad performance in Singapore, and all of a sudden they're used to being at the sharper end of the grid, and here they are mired in the middle of the grid. It's probably frustrating a weekend all the way around.
Oh, exactly, and I'm sure. I mean, you're pumped up like that, and I mean he was in the points fourth, coming off his best F1 race ever, and here he is right back where he was in the beginning of the season. So it's kind of going backwards, especially after he's on that high. But, I mean, they're really pumping up their tires. They're saying this car is good for Suzuka, so we'll see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was stuck behind, was it Jaime?
Yeah, it was Alguersuari, yep.
Yeah, I could listen to Bob Varsha say that for hours on end. Believe me, Alguersuari, who was just, he was awful this weekend. He blocked every car on that track at some point.
He really filled the truly mobile chicane role, didn't he?
He was not. It wouldn't be so bad. I don't care if you're slow, but if you're slow, don't try to drive like you're going fast. Get out of the way.
Yeah. He's not paid to get out of the way, though.
You're in 18th and you are exceptionally slow. You're in Marty Roth position. Pull over. You're not going to do anything.
I think eventually the team sided with you on that one and said, that's a wrap, boys. Let's go to Japan.
Yep. So that just about covers it, mostly for Singapore. There wasn't really... It was processional, and the atmosphere kind of took over the race. Some of the headlines from this week. The biggest one, the one that is by far and above the worst-kept secret in all of motor racing history, Fernando Alonso will be at Ferrari in 2010. Initial thoughts?
Todd, I'll let you take that one.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a little biased, Cole, as you know, and being a Ferrari fan. Okay, up front, it's easy to say this is a big move. This, and you don't want to get into hyperbole, and you don't want to get into... projecting that this is the greatest thing since, you know, Ascari set in a Ferrari. This is, you know, this isn't that kind of thing. It potentially could be huge because Alonso, I don't think anyone, whether you like him or don't, would question this guy's ability. And in the right car, and certainly in a Ferrari, he could be a very serious threat, not just for next year, but for multiple years. And it is looking like it could set up a real barn burner of a year next year, as long as Ferrari, McLaren, and you know, a couple other teams, Braun, and everybody doesn't lose the plot. This could be an epic battle next year between Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso, and not to mention their teammates. Should it be Kimi, or should it be, well, it is going to be Massa. So it'll be interesting. Stevie D came out today and said, oh, there's no team orders. You know, well, he's already got that management problem over there with Alonso, because there is the Alonso clause. And as much as they'd like to say there's no team orders, you know, we saw he's just going to have a hell of a management job like Ron did in 2007 with Alonso and Hamilton. Now he's going to have that with Alonso and Massa. It'll be intriguing to see if the combination of Massa and Alonso work. I don't suspect Massa's in any position to be second to anyone, certainly in his mind, and it'll be interesting to see how they get along. The other side of this is that it could be incredibly huge and dominant and in another sort of Schumacher-esque era of dominance, or it very well could blow up in everyone's face, you know. But if Ferrari doesn't miss the plot on the car, and they're at the very, you know, tip of the grid come in 2010, Alonso in a Ferrari is going to be an absolute daunting fact. There's no question in my mind about that. So that's, you know, like you said, Colt, it's the worst kept secret since Ralph to Toyota in F1. Everybody knew it was going to happen. And so I think that's good. I think also it was a little odd for Luca to come out today and start saying, hey, you know, I think Alonso's going to be a better fit than Kimi at Ferrari. You know, that's kind of tacky. Take the high road, Luca D. I mean, that's you know, you don't burn your bridges until they're on them. And I think that was probably inappropriate. Kimi's not even, you know,
hasn't even left the garage yet.
Yeah, he's still in the garage. He's still wearing a Ferrari hat. So, you know, that's kind of tacky. But I know they're excited to have Fernando. Also, the other thing, as you guys know all too well, one of the things about Ferrari is it is a symbiotic entity with the entire nation of Italy. It just is. And it's probably one of the few. And the Tifosi are rabid. They've never really embraced Kimi, and probably because really Kimi doesn't really care. You know, he's not there to make friends with Italians. He's there just to race the car. And so they've never really embraced that. If you look at Michael Schumacher, he went to great lengths to learn the Italian language, to endear himself to the Tifosi. He did a lot of PR work and things in Italy to try to cultivate that support from Italy, and he eventually got it. I think a lot of people say, well, hey, you know, Fernando, he's Latin. He's going to slot right in there. They're going to really like that. But, you know, think back since the Minardi's days, I think Fernando's a personable guy, but I don't think he's that warm and fuzzy on the PR side, and he probably hasn't had the reason to be for the last 3 years at Renault, understandably. But even when he was winning titles, I wouldn't say that he was a chatty Cathy doll. So it'll be interesting to see how the Tifosi embrace him, and I don't know. I think we're going to see a rejuvenated Fernando here. This could be daunting, but I don't want to oversell it. It could be an epic failure, too.
I think I'm going to disagree with everything you just said.
Perfect.
Yes, that's what this is all about. On track, well, this is kind of an agreement. If that Ferrari steps up from this year and goes back to their 07 pace, he will be Schumacher-esque domination. Ferrari will win with the two of them all of the races. It's going to be bad. With the personalities and the Tifosi and all of that, Kimi is finished. Kimi is a McLaren driver. He sits in the corner and that's all he does. He's not out there and jumping around, and he's not Italian. He's not like he should be at Ferrari. And that really kind of set him back behind the eight ball the whole time, I think. And he never really fit in with the team. So I think Fernando is a little more outgoing. He tells people what he thinks. He doesn't hide away and drink a Coke and have an ice cream after the race. So I think he'll fit in better, and I think if they get that car up to speed, he will be unbeatable. Fred in red in 2009 is going to be a juggernaut if that car is up to pace.
Yeah, that's the moving target.
And my little take on the whole thing is, if Kimi stays in F1, then I think it's going to be really exciting. I mean, whether he goes, he says he's only coming back if he's going to a top team, so that really narrows it down. Obviously, Red Bull's got their driver lineup set, and I mean, Braun is the only thing that's a stretch. It's between Braun and McLaren. So if he's not going there, he's not coming back. It's safe to say. So if Kimi leaves F1, I think. Fans and people that are watching lose out on this deal. He's not the most exciting person to watch off the track, but I think he's very consistent, and generally he's as fast as the car is. And I think that's really been proven lately. I mean, like I've mentioned, he's had some very decent results as of late. I mean, minus Singapore, but you look at his teammates in the garage, and obviously, I mean, what's he going to do with Luca's information that he's giving and when he's coming off the track. I mean, it's pretty much useless, obviously, Kimi. And then the same, I mean, nothing against Giancarlo, but he's obviously not with the world on fire with Ferrari. And again, he's not really close to Kimi's speed whatsoever. So I really thought that Kimi and Massa were a good duo. I mean, in 2007, Kimi obviously was blazing quick, and then we go to 2008 where Massa is, I mean, if Glock doesn't suck in the wet, then Massa's world champion right now. But I mean, we could debate that all day, but I just think the biggest thing is Kimi is a huge driver. I mean, you talk to any Finnish person and they'll say, have you heard of Kimi Raikkonen? Obviously you have. I mean, he's huge there. So I mean, if he's not in Formula One, we lose. I mean, Alonso, like you're saying, Todd and Cole, I think if Ferrari's on the button with their car, the 2010, they're going to just be blazing. And I think Massa's going to be back, and he's going to have something to prove for sure.
Yeah, I would agree absolutely, Brian, that over the years I've really come to appreciate and like Kimi a lot. And you know, say what you will about his personal character, but you know, as a fan of F1, he doesn't have to go out and drink beer with me and come across as a lovable, huggable guy. Really what I'm looking for is performance and results, and he's done it in spades. I mean, in any given moment, the guy can be stunning in a car. There's no question. I've always kind of questioned how quickly he can be demotivated, which I think is a difficult character trait to work around. And I don't think McLaren worked with that maybe the best. But then again, they never built a car that could withstand Kimi, to be honest with you, when he was there. And I think Lewis coming in, you know, Lewis drives the heck out of that car too, and I think they've learned a lot. I think if he goes to McLaren, it's great. But you're right, Brian. If Kimi leaves F1, we all lose, because I think that's a bad, bad move. I think Kimi needs to be in F1. He needs to be in the top team. He deserves it. And there's a heck of a lot of people that are huge Kimi fans, and I'm one of them. I like Kimi. But from that perspective, I'd love to see him go to McLaren. And then you've got the, you know, Lewis Hamilton's number one there. So Kimi's really going to be behind the eight ball, just like his partner Finn Hakey. So it'll be difficult. But I think Kimi's a guy that can – I don't think Kimi will get rattled by the whole Lewis Hamilton phenomena at McLaren and all that. I mean, he's going to go out, try to drive 11 tenths. If they hamper him through strategy or he doesn't have the most current aero or whatever, well, it is what it is. I don't think he's going to get rattled like Alonso did. But and you bring up a very interesting point as well, Brian, in that the Alonso, Fred and Red, as Cole calls it, Massa, he's going to come out with shotgun going, and he is going to have a lot to prove because he's behind the eight ball. You know, we've just signed two-time world champion Fernando Alonso. Everybody rates as the top driver on the grid. And if Massa thought he had his work cut out for him taking care of Kimi, which Massa did. He was beating Kimi all through the year until his accident. But he's really going to have something to prove to stay ahead of Alonso. So that should be an interesting inter-team battle as well.
I'm going to have to disagree just a little.
Aren't you disagreeable this evening?
I don't know, Todd. Maybe one day we'll agree on something, but you're a Ferrari fan, so that's kind of hard to do.
Yeah, right.
Kimi, after he won the championship, he just seems to be a little like, okay, I'm done. Why am I here?
I mean, it's that demotivation I'm talking about, yeah.
He's either, on very few occasions, he's unbeatable. You cannot touch Kimi Raikkonen when he's on, but he's not on as much as he used to be 2 or 3 years ago. He just seems to be, I'm going to go and drink vodka and drive a rally car. That seems more interesting. He just doesn't have the drive to do it anymore. He's not devoted to F1 like he should be to be in a top seat, and I don't think that's going to help him in finding a seat unless it's at McLaren. So if he does go to Merck, where does Heike go?
I think there's enough new teams coming on the grid that, they're going to be looking for drivers that have experience with, mm-hmm. with this technical package. And I mean, you can't really put a price on it. I mean, I would think it'd be really foolish for those teams to go with two new rookies. I think for the driver market, this is probably the best year for them to sign, because if they're out of a ride, they've got a better chance than ever of being able to figure one up. There's very few years when there's actually more cars on the grid the following year. So, I mean, you even see drivers who have been gone for a while that are starting to walk around and saying they're interested in driving. I mean, even you got Jacques Villeneuve, who doesn't have a chance in hell, I think, of landing a ride.
God help us.
And I really, honestly, I hope he doesn't, because, I mean, anyways, that's a whole other topic for a different day. But I think Heike can land a ride. I mean, he has been quick, but I don't know what it is. Todd mentioned it as well. When there's one part at McLaren, he doesn't get it, obviously. You're always going to give it to the faster driver. So you put Heike with another team, maybe he's put more of in a position of a leader with maybe a rookie. And I think he could definitely prove his worth. I don't think he's done yet. I think he deserves another shot.
I would agree with that, Brian. I think Heike, you know, at F1B, Grace gives him a heck of a hard time. But I think Heike can drive a car. And I think at Renault, I think he proved that he can. You know, they didn't have the best car, but I think he did a pretty good job, hence McLaren hiring him. He, like anyone, he fell prey to the Lewis Hamilton. If Fernando Alonso can fall prey to the Lewis Hamilton phenomenon at McLaren, which I'm not berating, I'm actually supportive. Lewis Hamilton is a hell of a driver and should be number one at McLaren. But if they'll pick Lewis over Fernando Alonso, a two-time champion, what made Heike think that they wouldn't pick Lewis over him? They're going to, and I would endorse that. It's a team sport. But I think Brian's right. You've got Manor, Campos, Lotus, USF1, and then the former BMW team Sauber, Hinwil-based team. There's a lot of new teams coming in, and I think they're looking for experience. And I think there's enough guys on the grid to, instead of stooping down to pick up Jacques Villeneuve, for crying out loud, I think you've got Christian Kleen that deserves a ride. I think you've got Anthony Davidson that deserves a ride, Heikki Kovalainen that deserves a ride. And be real frank with you, I think if you're a new team looking for a veteran development guy, you can't get much better than Nick Heidfeld, who's going to be looking for a ride. So there's just five guys off the top of my head that are in positions of either test roles or current drivers that these teams have to pick up, and I think they'd be silly not to. I completely endorse Brian's statement there.
Todd, I have to throw one more name in the hat. I think you know who this is going to be.
Yeah, LeSeb. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Sebastian Bourdais.
You're right, Cole. You're right. There isn't any reason that Sebastian couldn't have an opportunity, because I disagree with Franz Tost at STR. Is Alguersuari or Buemi doing any better than what LeSeb was doing, Cole?
Don't even get me started, Todd.
Yeah,
they're not. Do you want me to go on for this, for Alex? Idiot ruined that team.
Yeah, it's kind of nonsensical. So there's another guy. Between us, we've named six guys that I think are rated, that are good, and ready to step in. You look at Tony Oliuzzi, who was test driver for us, and he stepped in. I think he's done a pretty decent job. So I think all these guys can. And I don't think you've got to go a long ways. And the guys we've just named are potential sort of team leaders, right? Mm-hmm. And that would leave the second seats open to pull up the Bruno Sennas and the Nico Hülkenbergs and the GP2 guys or some other, you know, maybe what you consider more risky moves on youth. And, you know, so that's, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
And I've always supported Somerton Bourdais at USF1 next year if that actually comes to fruition, if we actually get that team, which I'm hearing rumblings now that might be might be a little doubtful, so let's hope not, because I want to see that work out.
My sources tell me that Mr. Turley is a little disgruntled with his investment, because basically he's got a building with a couple computers. There's nothing to show for it. So and even Bernie is coming out saying that he didn't think they'll show up. Did you guys get a chance to see I don't even know. I was at Petit Le Mans, so I didn't know if Speed covered it. But did you guys get to see Jonathan's efforts at Road America?
I did not.
Road Atlanta, sorry.
I didn't die
okay.
there.
Yeah, I watched that race. I got to tell you, Cole, I think you're right. I think he looked really, really good. And, you know, here's an American kid I'd love to see get an opportunity.
I've been watching, sorry to cut you off there.
No, I'm not.
for all up the ladder series, and that kid can drive a car. He's been in lights, he's been in Atlantics, he's been in a lot of cars, and he's done well in all of them. He is very versatile, and he's going to be one to watch for here in a few years, just as Alex Rossi is. So.
Yeah, and I'll throw another name in there that I was impressed with at Petit was Derek Daly's son, Connor Daly. I think he looked really good in the Star Mazda race I watched. Thought he looked very tidy coming through, certainly 12 and where I was sitting in the media center. So, yeah, there's a few of them out there that look real potential.
And the problem with that is, though, that we have about five or six guys here in America that could fill that slot really good in about 5 years. We don't have a veteran driver that can take over that seat, maybe Ryan Hunter Ray, that are veteran enough to take over a lead F1 role. So maybe a Summerton in a testing seat, but definitely somebody, please, please get Sebastian Bourdais in 2010. For me, please! So, back to, what were we talking about? Oh yes, Heikki Kovalainen. So if Kimi does go to McLaren, that anyone that goes to McLaren right now is, in my opinion, killing their career.
I would agree.
That's why, and I like Nico Rosberg a lot, and he's been rumored to be going there. I do not want to see him. I'd rather see him stay at Williams and just fight it out with them, because if you go and take that number two seat at McLaren right now, look how it worked out for Fernando. Mm-hmm. Look how it worked out for Heikki. You cannot go up against Lewis Hamilton and expect to get anything.
Yeah, you're not going to. There's a few guys that it would be, in my opinion, would be a decent career move. At the time that Heikki moved over there, it probably was a pretty decent move, even knowing what he was walking into. But you take a guy like Nico Rosberg, that's a bad move. That's a career-ending move for Nico, and Nico deserves and should be a leader of a team. And going over there with Lewis is he's not going to be. That's a death knell. Now, I would say that, you know, Kimi Raikkonen going there, well, you know, Kimi's won a championship and all that kind of thing. There's probably not too much that he's worried about, you know, killing his career over there. And I don't think Kimi really cares as much. Another guy I think it might be a decent career move would be a guy like Adrian Sutil, mm-hmm. who hasn't really proven himself like Nico to be a team leader at this point, but could fold into the organization McLaren to possibly move later to a different team. I don't think it would kill his career like it would Nico's.
And the other one that I'd look at to go there is Timo Glock, who is really...
Yeah.
He's been impressing me as of late with his performance, you know.
Yeah, ditto.
With Trulli being Trulli. He's done well, and I think he has a future if he makes the right decisions, and I think he'd be going for McLaren. And our last bit of news here, moving on from our Heikki rant that lasted for about half an hour there, is Rubens Barrichello is now being rumored to be trading seats with Nico Rosberg between Braun and Williams next year. What are your thoughts, Brian, on this trade?
Well, I think, to be perfectly honest, I think Rubens would be probably somewhat happy with it. I mean, he gets to keep racing, and I think this elevates Nico to a team and a platform where he can really say, he's got to prove it, or he's going to kind of cement himself as a guy who can show glimmers of speed. But, I mean, he's going to be put directly against Jenson Button, who, unless Jenson puts it into a wall in three races in a row, he'll be racing with a world champion next year. So it'll be a great test to see how Nico can compete against a driver of Jensen's caliber. That being said, I also think Williams would be getting a heck of a driver out of Rubens, who has obviously shown that, I mean, the guy is, what, 37? Don't quote me on that. But arguably one of the most fit drivers in the entire pit area. So I think Williams would be thrilled to have him there. I'm not sure who they're going to have as a second driver, but if they do take Barrichello, I'm assuming they're going to go with the younger guy who they can work with and grow with the team. But I think that would be an exciting move for everyone.
It'll be Nico Hülkenberg at Williams.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, probably replacing either Rosberg or Kaz, yeah.
Poor Kazoo. He just,
yeah.
He has not had the most illustrious career in Formula One.
No, but he's, you know, as Japanese drivers go, Wasato and those guys, I've actually really enjoyed watching Kaz race and think he's done a pretty decent job. But I'm a little surprised at this, to be honest with you, if I can weigh in on the Williams deal. I really would have thought if they were looking for a veteran, nothing against Rubens, I think the world of him, and I'd love to see him win the championship this year. I think he's certainly paid his dues and he deserves it. But I would have thought that Williams would go for Heidfeld because he was there, and when he left, I know Frank Williams had made the comment that Williams has never been driver-centric, but when they let Nick go, that was a huge, a really bad decision on their part. And I haven't heard Frank say that about too many drivers because of what Nick brings to the development of the car and that kind of thing. So I'm a little surprised. I would echo Brian's point of having a young one. If you go with Barrichello, it's going to be Hülkenberg. But I'm a little surprised they would take maybe Rubens over Nick unless there was some sort of under-table monies back and forth, we'll swap drivers with you kind of thing that just financially made more sense for Williams than paying Nick, you know, a couple million a year to drive their car. Maybe it's financially motivated. But having said that, the idea of Rubens going to Williams, I would echo Brian's point. I think he'd be okay with that. He still gets to race. He doesn't want to retire. He'd rather be at Braun, no doubt, and at the sharp end of the grid, having an opportunity to go for the title. He going to Williams probably assumes he's not going to be in that position again. But then again, he's at the twilight of his career, and finishing his career at Williams, look, there could be worse things. So, you know, I'd be happy for him. I'd actually rather see Nick go there, but that's just my bias.
So if you're Frank Williams, you would take Nick over Rubens?
Yeah, I would. Uh-huh. Yeah, Nick's younger than Rubens. Nick is by everything that I've read and heard, Nick is one of the better guys on car development and feedback to a team and engineers. Nick is a known entity at Williams. Frank knows Nick. He knows how he operates. When Nick left, he said it was a huge mistake to let Heidfeld go. You know, if they're going to have Nico Hülkenberg as their up-and-coming superstar, their Nico Rosberg-esque type guy, then having Nick as the veteran there, I think, makes a lot of sense. Rubens at 36, 37, closing on 38, you know, it's a twilight of his career, and I think, I don't know, you just get a lot more mileage out of Heidfeld, I think, than you may with Rubens. Not that Rubens can't help develop a car. The guy's been around a long time and has seen a lot. But you know, Nick's younger, and I think he's probably every bit as good at development.
Plus Nick Heidfeld has that whole werewolf look thing going on. So.
Well, yeah, and he really annoys Grace. So what else do you need? You know.
I know he looks like a werewolf, and Ruben Barrichello is bald. So.
Right.
But if I had to choose, I would take Barrichello because with him you get, as you said, someone that's seen, he has seen it all in the sport. He doesn't make stupid mistakes. He knows what he's doing out there. And
you mean like hitting the wall and qualifying?
Yeah, like that. That's what I'm talking about. See? Right. To kill the buzz, man.
Sorry, man. You were on a good rant.
I'm ranting. You got to go kill all the fun. Nick has never really, in my opinion, and I know you guys like him over at F1B, he just...
Well, I do, but not F1B, but I do.
Well, Mark and the rest of them.
No, they tolerate me.
he doesn't seem like he's performed good enough.
Yeah, there's an argument to be made. You know, Hobbs is always taking the stuffing out of you. Oh, you know, Heidfeld only drives good when his contract's up and, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I think Nick is very capable. Yeah, I mean, typically, until Kubica came along, he has handled his teammates with about every teammate he's had, including Kimi Raikkonen. And he can be very, very fast. I think if he's in the right car, he could be on par with pretty much most of the guys on the grid. He is good, and he's very smooth. He's very Jenson Button-esque, if you will, in his approach to driving his car. And I know he's not winning races, and he's not always on the podium and that kind of thing. But if you look at Nick's performance overall, given an inferior car, you know, he's generally right there. And I understand your point, and I certainly wouldn't argue against Barrichello Williams, but I think Nick is a complete package from development to driving. You give him a good car, he isn't going to make a bunch of stupid mistakes either. He just doesn't, and he's real smooth on the car. He's an intelligent driver. There's a lot of drivers out there that are just really fast, but they really don't know why they're fast, and they just go in and drive the crap out of the car, and I'm not talking about you, Paul Tracy. And so they don't really have a clue why they're fast. But then there are intelligent drivers, and intelligent drivers, I think Nick's one. I think Jenson Button's one, Schumacher. Lewis is becoming one through developing his racecraft. You know, you get to that point, and, you know, and plus you just get more mileage, more years out of Nick.
And since you killed my buzz, I'm going to kill yours now.
Do it.
Nick, you've been in the sport for what, since 2001, Todd?
Yeah, yeah. He hasn't won.
How many times has he won, Todd? How many?
Yeah, zero.
What was that? What was the number in the W column? Oh, yeah, none.
None, so, yes. That would be zero.
You've been with some good teams, and how many wins does he have? Oh, yeah, none. So
yeah.
The place that I would, if I'm making a team, the place that I would get Nick is I think Nick would be an excellent test driver.
Ouch.
I think that is a bit of an ouch. I mean, in all fairness, his car has been a dog this year. Yeah. I think that car arguably the worst on the grid. I mean, if you got those drivers both off the record, I'm sure you'd hear Kubica and Heifel just rip it to shreds, because I think that thing's a real piece.
Well, and if you, Cole, let's take this point into account as well as we're talking about it. There aren't too many F1 fans that don't really rate Robert Kubica. They all think Robert Kubica is a real up-and-coming star. He's not handing Heidfeld his backside. And, I mean, yeah, he's beat him, you know, a few results last year here or there, but it's not like he's got Heidfeld blown into the weeds. And this year, Heidfeld's kind of reversed that. And so, you know, this is supposed to be one up-and-coming star in Kubica. He's supposed to be all that in a bag of chips, and he's not blowing Heidfeld away. And so you always measure a driver by his teammate. And I got to say that historically, although he has no wins, historically Nick has always handled his teammates just fine. They have not blown him away, and in most occasions he's beat his teammate. And so from that perspective, you know, I don't think he deserves a test role. I think he definitely deserves a seat in a current team. Now, it could be argued whether it should be Williams or not, but definitely if it was Lotus, Manor, Campos, one of the new teams, or staying where he's at with this Hinwil-based team, I think makes a hell of a lot of sense. You're going to lose Kubica more than likely, and perhaps to Renault. So why not keep Nick? He's the one guy and the one driver who's familiar with the entire program and who can help this new ownership move into the program. You know, and if I'm them, I'd keep Nick.
See, I think what you took what I said a bit out of context with the test driving. I mean, not now. I'm not going to shove him into test driving role, but later on in the future, I think he has the potential because he is, like you said, he's a very intelligent driver. And he's the kind of driver that could be good just plugging away and really developing
okay,
the car.
I understand. I get your point. I'd like to see him also maybe move into sports car. I'd love to see him try to, whether it was GT1 class, LMP1s, it doesn't really matter. I'd really like to see how he did there. And the reason I say that is you take an intelligent driver, sort of a methodical driver. I mean, you look at what Sebastian Bourdais did in the Peugeot at Le Mans. He was absolutely stellar. He was fabulous over there, and I think sometimes you can get some of these F1 guys that are intelligent drivers, and they can really flourish in that series. So, yeah, I mean, I agree, Cole, in the twilight of his career, I think he'd be a great test driver and development guy, or I think it'd be neat to see him over in sport car.
Yes, the great F1 rejectory retirement home. The shady, yeah. The shady pines of, yeah. Of Perry
Alan
McCarthy.
Alan McNish has a very interesting theory on that. he also, when I was talking to him at Petit, he also said, you know, when he got into sports car, he thought, well, this is where old F1 drivers go to die, you know. And he got over there and he says, that ain't it at all. He said, absolutely, these guys are on the absolute stone limit passing. There's more passing in Le Mans ALMS than there ever is in F1. And with the traffic and everything, these guys are phenomenal. This is not a joke. And he absolutely fiercely defends that the Le Mans series and ALMS and the cars and technology are far superior than F1. And he pointed out a heck of a lot of reasons why, and I don't know that I can disagree with him.
I agree. It's a great series, and I've had people call me out on this before, and I don't dislike ALMS and LMS. I just love how every time you look at the field, especially in GT1, you see the whole list of drivers that have, failed F1
careers.
Sarazen, McNish.
Yeah. Frank Montani.
Bourdais.
Yeah.
They just pile up.
Well, you know, I want to interject. Just throw something in. I don't know, Brian, you're probably a big IndyCar fan. I know Cole is, obviously. This is the name of the site. But how did you guys feel about Stirling Moss's comment about Piquet? He just roasted Piquet for being a cheat and putting in the wall and how anyone could ever do that. He didn't know. He rated Piquet absolutely untouchable in F1. Nobody would hire him. He said, I don't know, maybe at best he could go over and get a ride in IndyCar.
See, I love what he said up until that little snide remark. Because
yeah.
I agree. He is junk now. No one's going to take you after what you just did. Look what the show you put on. So maybe he should come drive an IndyCar. Sterling Moss, what are you good for, old man?
What would he bring to IndyCar, really? I mean, he would obviously bring a lot of attention, but only because of the huge scandal.
So
I don't think he would be a better driver than a lot of the other options they have right now. So, if he can ever get a team to pay him again, Nelson will be, I think he'd be more than happy with that. But I don't think it's going to come for quite some time. And obviously his last name has helped him out a little while, but he really took a baseball bat to that. And he's going to have a lot of time to sit and think about it because he won't be in a car for a while.
I don't see him in F1 or IndyCar anywhere. He's going to be driving, you know, taxis around, because after what you did, you're not going anywhere, dear. That's about as bad as it gets. No one's going to hire you after you... Oh, idiot.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I have a quick question about that little incident, and we'll leave it alone as it's been kind of everything everyone's talking about. But has Alonso been stripped of that victory, and if not, will he be?
No. No,
he's fine.
Yeah,
I was a little shocked by that. I mean, it's been proven that it's been rigged. I mean, it comes a point where, he wouldn't have won had his teammate not cheated. So I guess it is what it is. So we move on.
Yeah, the FIA made real, you know, up front. They said this one, it's not affecting anything in the points championship, the outcome. There is nothing. They're not going to do anything with that. It was really certainly a punishment going forward and deterrent for anything like this going forward. Yeah.
Back in my day, we called that NASCAR.
Yeah, back in my day. That's called racing rubbing.
Yeah, boogity, boogity, boogity. Digger cam, something else, I know. Okay, well, I think that is about all of our topics and juxtaposing, as Todd would say.
Yeah.
So I think the only thing left is our predictions for Suzuka. We always do our top three picks and our driver to watch / dark horse, who you're going to be watching, who you think will do good, but maybe not a podium performance. We'll start with you, Brian.
I'm not very exciting today. I picked it pretty straightforward, I think. I think Hamilton's going to be up there again. I mean, he was blazing fast in Singapore, so I'd expect him to be up there. I think Red Bull might be a little quicker this weekend. I mean, Force India saying they're going to be quick, and maybe BMW there pretty quick at Monza, but we'll see. So I picked Hamilton Vettel, and do you know what? I'm going to go with Raikkonen because he's looking for a ride. Maybe he wants to silence the cynics that he's still looking for it. And my dark horse, I thought Glock had a great race in Singapore, so I said, figure why not just carry it on to Japan? And he's got a lot of sponsors there he's got to impress, so why not?
Mm-hmm. And Hamilton is a really good driver in the web, but I don't think that, in my opinion, that McLaren's going to do well on a slick track if it does rain like it's supposed to, because we've seen how twitchy and jerky it is in the dry, and if it's like that in the wet, hello, Dolly. So Todd, who are your picks?
You know, mine's real close. I'm going to take Hamilton for the win. I think I'm going to take Vettel for second place. I'll take Jensen for third, and the dark horse for me probably is going to be Kimi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you never know. I think Singapore, he drove like a man who just lost his job, and I think he knew that racing. And now you're going to either have one or two reactions out of Kimi. You can pretty sure that he's either going to be completely disenchanted and disengaged with the race and end up mid-pack, or he's going to be pissed off and right at the sharp end of it. And that's pretty much what you get. He's either like a light switch. He's on or off. And so that would be my dark horse.
Okay, my picks. Haleswari, truly. Split my notes back over.
You're going backwards on the grid, aren't you?
Sorry. Yeah. Was counting backwards. I don't know what that's about. For the win, Jenson Button, great in the wet. Rosberg is second. He's going to redeem himself. Then Rubens, and then my dark horse is Glock, because he'll
home race, too.
Yep. So,
for Toyota.
For Toyota, not for Glock. He's not really Japanese, but...
Right.
So I think that just about wraps it up for the show. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on before we sign off here?
That's good for me.
That's good for me.
Okay, I want to thank Brian. He's my F1 editor at Planet IRL. Be sure to check out all of his material. And I want to give a special thanks to Todd from Formula1Blog.com. That's Formula, the number one, and blog.com.
Absolutely. Well, Cole, it's been an honor, and anytime. Great to be on.
So I hope you've enjoyed the show, and be sure to tune in next week for our pre-Homestead show, where we'll have a lot of on-the-ground reporting and some exciting events planned for that on the site. This is Cole from the PlanetIRL.com podcast, signing off.